From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
First this morning, we speak with Dr. Austin Smith. He's the medical director of the emergency department at Intermountain Park City Hospital. Dr. Smith joins us to talk about staying safe and on the seat of your mountain bike versus the alternative, which may result in a visit to that emergency department.
And then naturopathic physician Dr. Babby Lester and farm manager Mike Wong of Healing Seeds Farms in Peoa, along with Sophia Maletti of New Women Retreats, joined to discuss a new model for a farm that includes medicinal plants, herbs, and activities that nurture health and healing.
Oh, yes. This is The Mountain Life, and that's all part of it. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters. Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
With over 400 miles of single-track trails surrounding Park City, our little community has become a mountain biking mecca, which means lots of new people coming into the sport and, well, lots of new injuries that can ultimately end up with a visit to our next guest. He's the medical director of the emergency department at Intermountain Park City Hospital, Dr. Austin Smith. Welcome to the show, Dr. Smith.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's really nice to have you. And I know that with mountain biking season, you start to ramp up in the ER. What's the connection there? And why are we talking about mountain biking today instead of some of the many other sports that we do during the summer?
Sure. So we certainly have been ramping up. You know, we used to have sort of a shoulder season, and even though that's kind of going away with lots more people living here, we get much, much busier. And mountain biking, like you said, we have lots of new people in it and just lots more people on the trails. When you're out there on your bike, not only are you going high speeds, you're oftentimes in areas that are more remote than many other activities that we do. So not only is it the high-speed injuries we see, but folks getting injured further away from help. And the bikes are getting us to places that previously weren't as easy to get to. So there's a lot of reasons that it's important to talk about this.
Well, some would say, you know, if you've been around Park City for a long time, the trails have changed. They've changed in such a way that the degree of the angle of the slope is much less. And so it opens up the sport to many more people. Back in the day, you know, 30 years ago in Park City, all of these trails were so steep that it was only the gnarliest of people that could be out there mountain biking. Now it's everyone. And there's also this onset of the e-bike, even though they're not technically still allowed on our trails. I suppose it's hard for you to kind of capture each sector of the market in terms of who you see in the emergency room.
Right. I wouldn't say there's a single market by any means. We see sort of experts, beginners, we see it all. But I would say the majority are downhill. If I had to pick a sector, it's the downhill injuries that we're seeing the most of. And not to say you can't get injured going uphill, but the downhill is much more dangerous.
I could actually brag to my friends that going uphill is safer and heart healthier for them.
Absolutely. You're getting cardio and you're not going as fast. So yeah, there's a lot of reasons to go uphill, but you know, I totally get it. I also enjoy going downhill. So I'm not anti downhill.
Just want to be clear that going uphill, you are statistically less likely to get an injury and you're improving your health. So it's a win-win-win, but it is a lot harder. And biking is a challenging sport that requires the ability to have endurance and also manage risk in your descents. How is there anything on research or that you're seeing on, like, you know, people's comfort level with risk? And are you seeing, you know, people are like, yeah, I was sending it huge, or it's just a family out there and all of a sudden, like, someone fell?
Yeah, certainly a combination of all of those, but it's usually when people are defying gravity, when they're up in the air and going off these huge jumps, that's when we're seeing a large portion of these injuries. And, you know, I have a little bit of a bias. I'm in the ER versus the urgent care. So I'm really seeing the worst of the worst. So what I see is usually when people are going at high speeds or going in high in the air.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Dr. Austin Smith. He's the director of that emergency room out at Intermountain Park City Hospital. Austin, as you know, I had the distinction of visiting you back in late April. I think I was told when the ambulance delivered me to your fine establishment that I was the first of the season. And then we decided, no, I was actually the second of the season. It was very interesting to have, after my many decades here in Park City, experienced what it is to be on the trail and to be in an emergency situation and need to enlist the services of our paramedics and fire department. And it was very interesting to have that firsthand experience of what it takes to get someone off the trail and to you. It made me feel like, wow, I'm in such good hands. And this is something that they do every day. Maybe you can sort of describe how each situation, you know, will exist in getting the person off the trail and to you.
Sure. It's quite the process. And I think that folks oftentimes don't realize that, number one, they have to find you. And number two, getting to you can be really tricky. And fortunately, our Park City Fire Department, who it does most of these in addition to our Summit County Search and Rescue, and they have sort of a combination of motorcycles and ATVs and UTVs and of course, the ambulance that they use to get to our patients. And they do just an incredible job, and a huge shout out to them for how excellent they are and how professional they are. But essentially, someone falls down, contact with paramedics is made, and they use a combination of those different vehicles to get the patient. And they're always being very, very careful in transporting them if there's any concern for like a spine fracture or if they're seeing any other signs of major organ damage. They're going to be very, very careful, but also speed. And I'm sure you've heard the term fast is slow, slow is fast. And so they're getting these folks out. And then they're also making a decision, can they get them here to Park City or do they need to go to a major trauma center? And the vast majority of these of the injuries come to us instead of a major level one trauma center. And when they call us, they call us first and will give us an idea of how old the patient is, what the injuries are, and what their vital signs are. And based on our thousands of patients we see, we have some very strict criteria, and we even can make someone what we call a trauma one or a trauma two, which essentially shuts down the ER and opens up the CAT scanner. And so we can go straight there once we establish they're injured, or sometimes they're just made a regular activation, trauma. And whenever they arrive, first thing we do is make sure their airway is okay, make sure their lungs are okay. And then we start getting into the diagnostics. So that's sort of the general outline of what we do.
Well, it really struck me as a well-oiled machine. And I felt like my care was so great. Hope to never have to do it again. But it makes me wonder then about the statistics and about the numbers of people that you see in the emergency room.
Right. And we keep very close track of all of these. And we even keep track of what trails folks are injured on, because there are certainly some that are more dangerous. And we give feedback to the resorts on what trails are sort of more dangerous. As far as numbers, they're really all over the place. We generally see about 10,000 patients a year, but that's over the entire year. Our busiest time is really that Christmas week, if you look at all the weeks. But our busiest season is certainly summer season, because it's much more spread out. So we see about 20 what we call level one or level two trauma activations, and those are the most severe injuries we see. And that's about 20 of those a month, in addition to we see, you know, about 800 visits in a general month. And I'd say probably 30% of those are mountain bike accidents. So we're seeing a few hundred a month.
So I don't know if you can rat us out or rat the trail out. Which ones are you seeing the most common injuries?
Sure. I bet you could take a guess on some of them. but these are not bad trails. I'm certainly not ratting them out, but tsunami and tidal wave certainly are the frequently give us the high numbers of trauma patients. And again, these aren't, you know, trails made to hurt people. It's folks that are getting onto these trails very frequently that have either never been mountain biking and say, oh, I can do a black diamond skiing, so I can do a black diamond on my bike. And maybe they've never been on a bike before. So all trails can cause injuries, but those are two big ones.
So if we talk about mountain bike injuries, we're talking about clavicle, wrist, head. If we were to pull your ER team aside and do like a family feud, like causation, what are the top one, two, three reasons of causation for that injury? Would your team be able to like identify, oh yeah, a endo for the clavicle, that one's probably pretty easy. But what about the knee? What would be your causation, suspect causation for a knee injury on a mountain bike?
That's a great question. I'd say for the knee, and this, there's some really interesting injuries that can happen mountain biking. And I'd say with the knee, it's someone goes down on their side, they wash out, a sharp object, or probably a rock, will cut the knee. And, you know, you see a cut on your leg and you think, okay, maybe I need some stitches. But if it's right over a knee joint, or really any joint, but you chose the knee, if it's right over the knee, that cut can actually go penetrate the joint. And as you can imagine, if there's a cut that goes inside of a joint, bacteria can sneak in there. And if bacteria gets inside a joint, it's in this area where it's cartilage and blood, and bacteria can just really proliferate in the knee. And you can end up with a condition called septic arthritis, which is essentially an infection of the knee joint itself. So that's really the feared injury with the knee. And we catch these not infrequently, and they can be subtle. So I'd say that's the big fear with the knee.
I certainly would wonder. I would probably imagine some of you guys are like, oh, looks like you pressed your front brake, you broke your clavicle. But somebody would come in and be like, no, actually this moose just attacked me and slammed right into my shoulder and broke my clavicle. You know, do you find some of these outlier stories that change your paradigms of causation?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you never know if they're just telling the truth or they just want a better story. But certainly there are some just bizarre injuries, and wildlife is one of them. I know I have a friend that was riding down a beautiful trail, and suddenly there was a porcupine in the middle of the trail. You know, what do you do when you see a porcupine? You slam on your brakes. And he said he endoed and almost landed on the porcupine. And that would have been an interesting injury to see.
Oh, I'm glad he didn't land on that porcupine. I'm curious about other types of injuries or accidents, I guess, with the growth of mountain biking and so many people on the trails now. And sometimes we tend not, especially when we have visitors to town, they hear about one trail like the Mid-Mountain Trail, and then they don't know better to disperse among the trails. So they go to, you know, one trail, we get a lot of traffic. How often do you see injuries from head-on collisions?
Oh, those are some of the worst injuries that we see. And it's usually on a busy weekend. And of course, it's likely on a single track. But I remember July 4th in 2018, for whatever reason, it was just injury after injury, head-on injuries. And I think it was probably just what you said. One trail got real popular, and so everyone was on it. But it's usually weekends, and it's oftentimes folks not paying attention and also not yielding on the trail. Those are very frequent, and some of the worst we see.
I have to defend tsunami and tidal wave. I actually feel like those trails are safer because they're wider. You're not going to hit a tree, and they're well formed. So they're, you know, kind of taking your gravity and maybe doing the right thing with it. I'm just wondering if it's the sheer number of people on those trails, because they're some of the more popular ones in town. So just had to give that.
I agree with you 100%. And, you know, it's never the trail that causes the injury, right? So I would defend the trails with you. I would just say I would want folks to go down it once without getting air before deciding to go back on and get some air. How's that?
Excellent. What about other injuries? You know, Pete's mentioned the old clavicle. Did you mention that for a reason, Pete? Have we broken your clavicle before?
No. It's one of those injuries that seems to be so prolific, but also it's one of them that like shuts people down on biking, you know, for a while. It seems like a very traumatic, intense pain. So that's why I think that one stands out the most to me.
Dr. Smith, what are the most prevalent injuries?
Well, Pete nailed it. I'd say the clavicle is exactly what he said. It's very commonly injured and it's incredibly painful. And it's tricky for us because there's a lot of really, really important structures behind it. So whenever we see a clavicle injury, we're thinking worst case scenario because we're in the ER. So we're thinking, could they have injured their subclavian artery, their subclavian vein, their lungs? There's a big nerve complex called the brachial plexus there. So that's one. And I would say even more common are head injuries. And head injuries are can be subtle, but they can also be devastating. So I'd say we see even more head injuries than clavicles.
It seems like our community is doing a pretty good job teaching how to ride. There's so many different instructors and great classes. Even the NICA team here with 200 kids, they're doing a great job. But one of the things I haven't seen is how to crash on a mountain bike. And you look at the injuries and a lot of times people are doing this kind of, they're sticking out their arms. Is there any instruction on how to crash or any advice that you have for our listeners on how to crash on a mountain bike?
Yeah, that's a great question, Pete. And the easy answer, of course, is just don't. But if you're going to crash, that's a hard question to answer, because I think you have to decide, are you going to put your hands out and catch yourself, but then you're going to hit your wrists, or you can land on your shoulder and you're going to hit your shoulder. I would say protecting your organs, protecting your core and your head is probably the best option. But as far as how to crash, I don't know if I've ever learned that. And I certainly don't know of anyone doing any instruction on it. But I would say just protecting those organs is really, really important. Otherwise, I don't have a whole lot to add there.
Not a lot of people are interested in teaching how to crash appropriately on a mountain bike. And if they are, they're probably going to do it right near the hospital on that nice grassy hill and close proximity to you guys. So general advice on someone who is going out for a long ride, they're going to push their limits, things that they should be doing in advance. One of the things that we learned from a gentleman who had his arm cut off, you know, is make sure you let people know where you're going. What advice would you give to mountain bikers who are going out either for the first time or someone who's pushing their limits and they're going to go out for a long day? What would be the advice you'd give?
Sure. So 100%, I agree with you with tell someone where you're going to be. And in addition to that, make sure your bike is in good condition. I know that I'm oftentimes have these like short time intervals where I can go on a ride, and I'm sometimes not as diligent about making sure everything is well functioning and tight. So making sure your bike's in good working order is really important. And then as far as the body, you know, you want to make sure you're well hydrated. You've had a big meal, maybe not right before you ride, but certainly want to make sure that you've got plenty of calories in you. And then making sure you bring what you need with you. So you really can't bring too much water, right? And so bringing some water, bringing some snacks. And if you're going to do a big ride and you don't think you can really bring that much or you don't want to, do a drop the day before and drop some water along the trail and leave it so for your ride. And then make sure you have some sort of communication device. And that's a wonderful thing about living here is we have service almost everywhere we go, but having some sort of backup device like an InReach or something like that can be absolutely life-saving. And then, of course, preparing for weather. We could have a mountain shower. Now, it doesn't rain very often, but it's still important to have what you need in case it gets cold or in case it gets wet or in case you get trapped. You know, you have a catastrophic bike malfunction and you have to spend the night or something like that. So just making sure you have that stuff is so important.
And also knowing where you are. That's important in case you do need to call for emergency services. Which trail are you on? And I wanted to ask you, it seems almost like a moot point talking about helmets because I literally never see anyone on the trail without a helmet on, which is great. But do you ever see injuries that result from the helmet maybe not functioning properly or, you know, it's not fit properly or things like that? What do you say to people about helmets?
Of course, and you're that's so true, Lynn, about helmets. Everyone has them now, and it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But just as important as the helmet is making sure it functions, right? And so you mentioned the fit is really important. And so many people are buying things online now that I worry about that. And we see that. Just the other day, I saw a kid who endowed, and it didn't even matter that she had a helmet on because it went back over her head, over the back of her head. So it's so important to make sure they fit correctly. And what I tell folks is if it's your first helmet, make sure you're getting fitted for it. Make sure it fits correctly. And the other thing about helmets is the way they're designed is to absorb the energy from the fall. And by doing that, they crack. And you may not see that, but they essentially, your head hits the helmet and the helmet absorbs that energy. And it does so by cracking everywhere. So once you've had one fall, and even if it's fairly minor, once you've had one fall and you hit your head, the helmet is no longer working. I mean, the way they're designed is to absorb that energy. And if you've cracked it, even if you can't see it, it's not going to work as well the next time. And similarly, they have shelf lives, and it varies by manufacturer, but they don't last forever. So you certainly want to replace your helmet. So it's always important to look at the manufacturer's guidelines on when to do that.
And helmets are really effective. My particular injury was over the handlebars landing on my head. I didn't even get a concussion, but I fractured a couple vertebrae. So it makes me feel so lucky that I had a really high quality helmet with the MIPS technology, which I'm not exactly sure what that does, but I know it's what you want, right?
There's lots of different technologies. And MIPS is a really interesting design. And MIPS is one of the many. But essentially, when they make a helmet, the way they test them is they drop them with some weight and see what sort of impact they can take. And so they're really just looking at a blunt force, unidirectional injury is what the general sort of manufacturer's testing does. And MIPS is sort of takes into account, what if you get hit from the side? Or what if you get hit and it causes a rotation? And it's really interesting. It's a Swedish neurosurgeon who designed that and along with a bioengineer. And he said, you know, we have in our brain, we have what's called cerebrospinal fluid, which is a layer of fluid around the brain. So the MIPS does just that, which is it has you can see the yellow liner in it, or sometimes it's not yellow, but you can see this extra little piece of plastic, and it allows the helmet to move a little bit, or allows the energy to move a little bit if you're hit from the side. So there's lots of different studies, and I went through all these studies looking at it, and it's tough because, you know, a lot of this is manufacturer supported. But I will say I wear a MIPS helmet, but there are also plenty of other different designs out there. So I'm a fan.
Well, good to know. Dr. Austin Smith, the medical director at the emergency room at Intermountain Park City Hospital. It's been great speaking with you. And any last words about safety out there on the trails?
Well, I just would want to say that I love all of our trails out there. So just because I mentioned tsunami and tidal wave does not mean I don't love those. I would just say, you know, most important thing, be safe out there, stay on trails that are at your ability level, wear protective gear, take care of your bike, but also have fun. I'm a mountain biker, so this is not me being anti-mountain bike. I love it. And just want to thank you, Lynn and Pete, for having me. Pleasure to be here.
And again, that was Dr. Austin Smith, urging everyone to please be safe out on those mountain bikes this summer. And if you're not, and you end up visiting him, like I did, unfortunately,
He is a great guy, and they do a wonderful job out there.
And welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Medicinal plants to treat patients is something our next guest, Dr. Babbi Lessing-Stern, has used in her practice as a naturopathic physician for years. Now, with the help of farm manager Mike Wong, they have created Healing Seeds Farm around the topic of food as medicine. They also host educational elements and retreats at the farm. Sophia Maletti of New Women Retreats joins to describe an upcoming retreat that we'll talk much about soon. But first and foremost, Dr. Babbi, really excited to have you on the show, and talk to us a little bit about your background as a doctor in the community, and many people know you in that capacity, and what led you to starting this specific farm.
Thanks, you guys. It's an honor to be on today. And I graduated from naturopathic medical school in 2006 and moved back to Park City. I was born and raised in Park City and was really embraced by the community in naturopathic medicine. A huge part of my education was botanical medicine and healing the body through botanical plants for lots of different maladies. In Chinese herbal medicine, we're starting to see shortages because of things not being able to come over from China. And there's a big move to start growing our own medicine here. So that was a big impetus. And the pandemic really encouraged me to pursue a lifelong passion of starting my own botanical medicine farm.
So help me to understand, and I'm going to put Mike, you on the spot, because you're the expert in the science of this farming technique. What makes your farm unique and different versus a traditional, like, organic farm?
Well, we are an organic farm. I think what makes us different is the fact that we are focusing more on medicinals. Mm-hmm. We do have a small produce component where we are selling 10 CSA shares. But really, Babbi wants to focus on medicinals, Eastern medicine, root medicine, ashwagandha, echinacea, things that help heal the body naturally. So that's what differentiates us, say, from a copper mousse or Renui. We're really focusing more on the medicinals.
Dr. Babbi, I'm wondering, what are those medicinals that you had a hard time getting from China? What did you come up short on mostly that you find that you prescribe on a daily basis in your practice?
Renshen, ginseng was the big one. And then it's more of a preventative lens. So it's starting to see the writing on the wall that, you know, we're having some quality issues with the herbs that were coming in, and I wanted to get a jump on it before all of a sudden they were gone.
Well, we know with, as you said, Renui Gardens and Copper Mousse, farming can be achieved here at 7,000 feet or 6 or 7,000 feet. But I'm wondering what the particular challenges are. I mean, did you know when you decided to start Healing Seeds Farm that you could really pull it off in Pioa, which is probably more like 6,000 feet? Mike, why don't you chime in on that?
Yeah, it's about 6,500 feet. Personally, I don't have a farming background. I'm engineer based. I've done some other things, but so this was all new to me. I think I know how to run an organization, but as far as farming, I'm really relying on two key people right now, and that's Daisy Fair, who started Copper Mousse. She's been our consultant, and we have another woman named Siobhan Reynolds, who actually grew up here as well, and she's our main cultivator. So I'm relying heavily on them to learn about our growing season, what works, what doesn't, and the soil is a huge component of how everything grows and what makes a successful crop. So it's a learning experience for me.
Yes.
And Lynn, if I can add on to that, we're at the base of the Weber River, so the 38 acres of property that we're on is at an alluvial span. So the soil is very rich in organic matter. And then we also, we're using Jeff Carpenter, who grows in Vermont. So we're doing primarily zone 4B herbs, but we're subsidizing. We have different zones. We've got a growing dome that allows us to grow up to zone 8, and then a hoop house that allows us to grow warmer weather herbs.
Great. So. And I ask this question because I am just the biggest failure at growing. And, you know, I every so often I'll try to grow basil again, and it just fails. And I think I just turn it over to not my shortcomings, but the shortcomings of living at 7,000 feet. So it's good to hear. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Dr. Babbie Lester-Stern, with Sophia Maletti, who we've yet to bring in, and Mike Wong, who is the farm manager. We're talking about Healing Seeds Farm. And Sophia Maletti, let's bring you in. Oh, I wanted to mention that all three of you, born and raised here in Park City, Sophia and Mike graduated from Park City High School about 1996, I think Babbie in 94. So you are locals, as local as it gets, and it's cool that you all are still here. Yeah. So
you got to stick together, right?
That's right. So Sophia, how did you get involved in this venture?
So Mike and I are really close friends, and one day he said, "Would you like to come to the farm and visit?" And chat about maybe hosting some retreats there. So that's how it started. I came to the farm, and I just sat down with Babbie, and we mostly just sat down and had a chat about what our, you know, vision was, and it seemed to be in alignment, and we went from there.
So you have an upcoming retreat, and the New Woman retreat up in July 14th through the 17th. Tell us a little bit about that event. Or those days, and what kind of you're hoping to achieve at Healing Seeds Farm?
So this is a retreat for women only. So far, we've only scheduled retreats for women, and hopefully in the future we will have some formats for co-ed retreats. But so this one focuses on helping women restore and renew health using a multitude of practices, skills and tools that we'll teach during the retreat. So I actually have an 8-week coaching program for women over 40 specifically, and the retreat, the 3 days or 3.5 days, is basically going to be kind of a condensed version of that 8-week program. So the you know, we cover so many things. So I basically teach women how to kind of step into fullness and restore and renew health using, breath work, meditation, mindset, upgrading your nutrition, learning how to eat better, learning new cooking techniques, learning how to sleep better. So it's all the things that I teach in my coaching program in this one weekend.
Well, is there the opportunity? I see that Jody Rogers has also been part of the Healing Seeds Farm team. Will she also be joining you for your retreat?
So she and I have teamed up for the food portion of the retreat, and that's something I'd like to highlight, is that a lot of retreats, and I've been on many, even, you know, yoga teacher trainings, whatever it is, the food usually takes a backseat to the programming. So in this experience, the food is going to be mind-blowing, exceptional, 5-star food. So I've crafted the menu. They're all my recipes. And Jody, she was the executive chef at Deer Valley, so she and I have teamed up to offer an experience that is just as much a culinary experience as it is a healing retreat experience. So get really excited about the food, for sure. And a lot of the food is grown on site. We're actually going to the Willow Springs Trout Farm in Samick to source our trout. It's all locally sourced food, crafted with love, and very nutrient dense, and crafted for healing too.
Yes. Well, as part of the New Woman Retreat, you also at Healing Seeds Farm have a sort of a glamping set up, and it's gorgeous. So, Babbie, what was the vision for creating this glamping? I assume it maybe kicked off with, oh, we can have some friends over and we can have some events. And tell us about that portion of it.
Yeah, so we have 9 bell tents, and they each have a queen size bed and a single size bed in there with some chairs and heaters and 2 teepees with, you know, full framed beds. And the vision was exactly that, Lynn. It was to be able to host retreats like the one Sophia is doing, and to be able to really get people on the farm for a healing learning experience.
Great. And Sophia, when you say, you know, you're hosting this just for women, and it's not meant to, of course, exclude you men, but women, especially over 40, have a really unique set of circumstances, namely menopause. And the more that I hear and learn about it from, you know, people like that we've interviewed on this show, like Dr. Sarah Gottfried, who basically talks about mitigating the effects of menopause through food. So could you speak to that briefly?
Yeah. So, excuse me. One of the things I teach is called cycle syncing, and that's actually for, and we will talk about that in the retreat and learn how to do that. Basically, cycle syncing is using food and exercise to, instead of be at the mercy of your cycle, to actually use it to benefit you and heal hormones, right? And increase energy, feel normal instead of in pain and tired and agitated. And then there are lots of foods and herbs that also support perimenopause and postmenopausal women. So we will offer all of that information, and it's all really practical. None of it's like, you know, it's really easy to kind of weave into your life. And these are lifestyle changes that are simple, but effective and life-changing and life-enduring, right? So, and this is just, you know, hormones and healing hormones is just one little piece of what we have to offer that weekend. So it's about movement practices. It's about meditation. It's about learning new forms of breath work that benefit you in different ways. So it's a lot to cover. There's a lot of content, but we have, no one's leaving. So we're all on site the whole weekend. And it's also going to be a lot of fun. And it's so beautiful. It's such a magical place to be.
The child in me is really captivated by the magic and the forest bathing and, you know, the other descriptors in there. And so I just imagined, like, it would be like a little utopia paradise that one will be able to experience. Hopefully in the future you'll be able to offer it for males too, so we can have our magic time and
forest bathing. I've been crafting the programming for a co-ed retreat, and I feel like it makes sense to do an all men's retreat too, and have maybe Mike or maybe someone like Jeremy Wolstein or another wellness leader in the community do retreats for men too.
I hope so. Mike, how do you balance at the farm? How do you balance the practical components of operating farm as well as the healing components of it, and bringing the aesthetics so that the experience is and conducive with the farming and the practicality?
Sure.
Talk a little bit.
Yeah, good question. Well, this is our first real season, and Babby has a really big vision here, right? Mm-hmm. We want to have a healing retreat that also produces medicinals, and with educational components and classes, and, you know, we want to have it open to kids, and, you know, maybe have a school there in the future. So it's right now it's trying to take this big vision and, you know, distill it down to what's actually, you know, possible this first year and the second year, and see how it grows. So it's a lot of work, but it's coming along. It's a pretty beautiful, special place.
I was going to make the comment about when the men's retreat happens. I think you will have to wear your fairy wings.
Oh, we can do that.
Wings are definitely doable.
And sparkles. But it's a good point, and men need this sort of nurturing healing as well. I wanted to ask about some of the medicinal plants. I recently had a conversation. I know you all know her in the community, Karen Carastia, who started Alpine Apothecary, and then she went to work for the dispensary locally. And we had a long conversation just about the medicinal properties of cannabis. And I know it's Well, I don't know. That's my question. Is that allowed to be grown? And Babby, maybe this is a question for you.
So cannabis there, Utah has issued 8 cannabis licenses with no intention of increasing that number. We are allowed to grow hemp, which is a THC strain, but really good for CBD, CBN, CBG, and we do have a hemp component. Right now we're growing indoor hemp and outdoor fields. So it's the medicinal benefits of hemp are pretty impressive, and we will blend hemp into some of our medicinal tinctures.
Great. So, and I would imagine that a lot of people who aren't familiar with the cannabis plant would prefer to have the psychoactive, if that's the right word, component removed so that, you know, so they can just really experience the medicinal properties.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and we actually have been approached by Dragonfly Wellness, who does have one of the licenses, and they have asked us if we would grow hemp for them because especially in Utah, people are looking for the healing benefits without the psychoactive component. We're excited about it.
And so that's a whole nother component and challenge is the production and manufacturing of those for mass or general sales. Is that something that, Babby, you guys are pursuing, or are you trying to keep it small and really specialized for now?
We'll do that all in-house. So from seed all the way to soul is kind of our tagline, and we'll do the growing, the processing, and the finished product. So, and we'll be more boutique and keep it small scale.
I'm gonna jump to the CSA because you only have 10 CSA opportunities. But I loved your social media content that you were creating to advertise to those 10 folks what they were going to get for their monthly distribution. I think you had like a catwalk where all of your staff members were advertising, you know, the tomato plants and the radishes and so forth. I guess, Mike, you really kind of shined on that one. There was a lot of sass on that post. And,
Thanks, Pete.
How did you learn about, you know, catwalking and advertising of produce?
Yeah, Siobhan Reynolds, she does all our social media outreach. But we wanted to keep the CSA small for the first year just to make sure we really nailed it and we could produce what we said we would. And I was, and for those of you listening that don't know what a CSA is, it stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And it's basically back in the day when farmers started out, they needed money to buy their seeds. So what they would do is they'd get the community to chip in and they would be able to buy their seeds and then they would share their crop with the community. So hence the CSA started and we wanted to get involved with that aspect, but keep it small. We are focused on the medicinals. That's our goal.
In the CSA, are there also medicinals with a little instruction on how to use them?
Well, the food is the medicine. So yes. But no curated products yet. Okay. Right? We're still in the formulation phase and we still need to finish growing the actual medicinals.
And then those 10 CSA memberships, did they go like that? It's very, very popular around here.
It is. They went extremely fast. People are in desperate need of good quality food. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. We had no problem selling those.
Yeah. Well, perhaps you should stop advertising so well on your social media.
Thanks.
I mean, because the next level would be for you to deliver it like that to one's house.
Cat walking into someone's house. Okay. All right. Maybe week 4. It's coming up.
All right.
I like the idea, Pete.
Well, Babby, what for you and your team was the most challenging medicinal herb or item to grow here in Utah? I mean, I know there's all the infrastructure and the hoop houses, but what was really the most challenging?
Right now, the one that is the most challenging is ashwagandha, because it's in warmer climates and can be grown as a perennial, meaning it grows year after year. Here, it has to be grown annually, but it's 120-day germination, and so we've got to get the seeds in early and hope for a later harvest.
Dr. Babby, I have wanted to ask you about what you're doing in your practice recently. For many years, you had Mountain Sage Natural Health and a very popular naturopathic physician here in town. And life has shifted a little bit for you. So are you still in regular practice or what are you doing now?
Thank you for the compliment. I just sent an email out to my list saying that I'm taking a sabbatical to get the farm going and focus on family. I'm also doing a year-long mentorship in what's called alchemical healing. And so I really want to dive into that. It's a pretty transformative process, and we'll pick it back up when I am through with that.
Well, tell us about alchemical healing. I only think of that book, The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho or whoever that was.
Yeah. It uses acupuncture and spirit medicine essentially to go in and find the personal lead, so to speak, sort of the things that keep us up at night, the things that disturb our spirit, the things that you know, are kind of our lifelong work, and brings conscious awareness to what that is, and understanding that actually is a treasure that we can transform into our gold. And so alchemy, as you know, is really reversing the aging process, not biologically, but more spiritually, mentally, emotionally. What are the things that, how do we find our spark again?
And as you're taking a break and focusing on family and some of these other pursuits, Mike is full-time at the farm. And then, Sophia, for you, what are, outside of this retreat, what else are you doing?
So I have the coaching program, the 8-week coaching program, and I call it New Woman, spelled N-E-W-O-M-A-N, right? So especially since... once we hit 40, so many things change in our bodies, and we really do have to reinvent ourselves and re-alchemize, right? And I also teach yoga throughout the community. I teach at Enlightened Wellness, just about to reopen the shop, teaching there. And I still cook part-time. I'm a personal wellness chef, so I have some clients in town who I cook for.
All of this is so interconnected, the cooking, the wellness, the medicinal components, the active lifestyle. I'm so curious, is there a component that, you know, we need to add, like, perhaps wildlife and hiking to that, an adventure component to the farm? Mike?
Maybe. I don't know yet. Everything's still under cultivation, right? Okay. We're still growing, so we'll take that into consideration.
And Pete, that's part of the grander vision. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we have is in the books is an adventure center, so that we can take people, you know, we're right by the High Uinta Wilderness, and to take people not just on hikes, but more soul retreats and rites of passage ceremonies into the woods, and really nature as medicine, a huge component of that, because it is also interconnected.
I was able to have my own kind of rite of passage this weekend, and was educated that you also had a adventure with Lynn that was kind of a rite of passage for a while.
That's true. Lynn's a good adventure buddy.
Oh, back in the day. Yes, and so I wanted to brag on Dr. Babby, how she's not just an excellent naturopathic physician, but a very accomplished athlete who I could never keep up with, of course. So it'll be exciting to see that brought back into what you're doing there at Healing Seeds Farm. Sophia, I wanted to ask you about, you know, as you do private chef services and educating women on food, what do you think we are missing the most? What do we not know? I mean, many of us know what it is to eat healthy, but what are we leaving out?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think learning how to listen, right? So, and that's one of the things I really love to teach is it sounds really cheesy, but deep listening, right? Learning how to listen to your body, and there are different ways to do that. So starting a food journal, writing things down, really listening to your body and how you respond to certain foods, because there's no, you know, right dietary theory. Right? They can all work. A lot of them work, and some of them don't work for anybody. So it's about learning what foods, and not just foods, but the herbs and the supplements that support you, and getting the right practitioner to help guide you along. So whether that's a functional medicine doctor or a naturopath, really teaming up with the right person who can be your guide moving forward. I would say learning how to listen. And if someone were to ask me, you know, in an apocalyptic scenario, you can only take one supplement. The one thing I would take is my high quality hemp extract. The plant is our ally, and it's there for us, for our healing. And it's the most nutrient-dense food in the world. There's no other food I believe in more than that plant.
Great. Well, we've got to let you all go. We're so glad that you could join us. Sophia, what is your website for the New Woman Retreat?
So my website is my name, sophiamiletti.com. So it's sophiamiletti.com. And if you go to the website, you'll see on the contact page, you can register for the retreat, or you can learn more about the retreat under What's New.
Great. Mike Wong, farm manager, healingseedsfarm.com.
Yeah, you can go to healingseedsfarm.com and also find Sophia's contact info and join our mailing list and find out what's coming up and what we're up to.
Excellent.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Well, yeah, thanks for
thank you
us.
All for being here. Mike Wong, Sophia Miletti, and Dr. Babby Lester Stern. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you want to share it, all our shows are under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.